Your hand begins to cramp from the hours of note-taking. You turn the page of your journal and realize that you're on the last page. When did that happen? Regardless, you take to writing in the margins, the cover pages, and even the outside of your journal itself. Desperate for something, anything to write on, you reach for the napkin, peeking below Keltlasar's foot, hoping he doesn't notice. Welcome back to the Dark Attic.
Hi everyone, welcome back to the Dark Attic Season 1, Episode 3, Part 3. We are jumping back in right where Part 2 left off, so if you're listening to this right after Part 2, there should be no real difference between where the conversation ended and where this conversation has started. So welcome back, sit down, enjoy, wherever you're listening, and I hope you guys enjoy this episode.
It's interesting, because I've been trying to do a mapping between what you're saying and my own model of that. I think I have a simpler way of saying it.
Go for it.
I like the idea of harmony. And I think...
like resonant frequencies?
Sure. I don't think about it in a scientific term way.
Okay.
I think about it like... I don't have a very specific way of thinking about it, but I think about it as, like, say, Taoism thinks about it, or even Buddhism. A way of being in the world which is, like, not in conflict with the way the world is designed to be. And I think when a harmonious way of being has, like, captured you, or if you've entered into it, and your attention is shaped by this, I think that, like, that is the, like, the feeling of peace in what you're doing. So I think when a person isn't aligned with the eternal and the permanent, they're in friction. It's like when we launch a rocket, up again, over and against gravity, that rocket is under unbelievable friction because it's like kind of going against the way the universe works. And I think there's a moral way of looking at this too. Although moral, I feel like it's a too small a concept. There's a way of being human, which is like not fighting gravity. Like there's a way of being human, which is like flowing in the river rather than like walking against it. And like there's energy used still, but one's attention is directed differently. And I think attention is one of the key things. I was thinking about while you were talking. It's like when you're engaged in harmonious action, you can be taken up completely by it. And like, I think your body's the status, I don't think the status of the physical body has changed, which is, I think it's different than your model and mine. But since one's attention isn't on the body, it feels as though you're operating like at a different physical energy state because you're less attentive to the state of your body. And that like allows you to go farther and do more. So that's how I was mapping it to how I think about it. And I can kind of see like when you're moving in this harmonious way, even though your body is still at work, it just doesn't have like the friction of being outside of God's will. That's my mapping. I don't know if it's useful at all.
No, I would agree with you to the extent, like with my mapping, to me, what you're describing can still be completely the body and soul. I think on a higher level, it can also refer to the spirit. It's more conceptual and thus can apply to both.
Now, I have a different way of thinking about body.
I think the one thing I'm adding to, I think what it would do is, what I would say is yes. And the one thing I'm adding is that there are times we can engage with the spirit of God that does hijack the laws of reality. Hack was the word I'm looking for.
Yeah, you're right. Board. You picked that up correctly. Like I perfectly accept that these things happen, but I, at least for now, I like to categorize them under mystery. I don't try to bring them into my model. No, I'd like something like resurrection. Like, how does that happen? I accept that it happens, but I categorize it as mystery.
I think I'm okay with it being a mystery. I think the only thing I'm saying is we can recognize it when it happens, And I think we can press into it happening more often.
Yes. Yeah.
We, and of course we all agree that that has to be done from a state of humility. Like, we can't be trying to force it.
Oh yeah. I couldn't agree more with that. You know, God is that unstoppable force. Like, you could be a vessel of the force, but you can't direct it.
Yeah. That's the one thing Lucas got. That's one thing Lucas got right. With the force, that you don't control the force. The force flows through you.
If it's interesting and it resonates, there's something right about it. I think there's an something we haven't done is actually circled back to the actual manifestation that started the conversation, the pillar of fire and the pillar of cloud. And instead of trying to talk about what they mean symbolically, Bible scholars can do that. We could talk about kind of what it looks like the effect was on the Israelites. Kind of in keeping with the idea of the monster appears, well, what is its effect on you? And what I was thinking about is the way in which the pillar sort of hemmed in Israel and prevented their turning back toward Egypt. It's like this direct confrontation. It's like, you can go back where you were before if you go through the monster, or you can let it lead you and go where it wants.
It does seem to suggest destruction or symbolically purification, which is kind of everything we've been talking about here. And when I mentioned the whole demanding reaction and the fact that it's an opportunity to break our habits, that is purification. And I was just, one other thing I wanted to say about exhaustion, the fact that when you follow the spirit, it often is extremely painful and exhausting and destructive to the body. But that's because it's breaking down the rocket engine that's trying to defy gravity. It has to destroy this structure that we've created, which is what a habit is. Even on a physical level, it's a strong neural muscle. And we have to act. And when you go to the gym and you pump iron, you're putting micro tears in your muscle in order to build it up. And that produces lactic acid, which is why there's soreness and it hurts. And we only have so much we can push through. Well, it's the same with neurons. When you're scared because of the pillar of fire or the tornado, I like thinking of these things as tornadoes.
Yeah, me too.
It's like the destructive power of a tornado, the destructive power of fire. These things are going to tear you apart. But that's kind of the point, because there are habitual neural structures in your body that need to be torn down. Those micro tears need to be breaking neural pathways so the body can then absorb those cells and reconstitute them and make something better, so that you no longer have this impetus, this encouragement, this temptation, this drive. There we are. That's the word I'm looking for. We break down the unhealthy neural habits. You no longer have this drive that's causing you to abandon the poor, that's causing you to walk away from the monsters you need to love. Which is why Peter says, those who have suffered have ceased from sin. Because when you suffer through the fire of God, when you suffer through the tornado that's ripping you apart, on the other side, that the wind that ripped you apart has put you back together. Only now you no longer have all this resistance and drag, and you can just run and it's easy.
Right.
That's what chiropractors, it's the point. That's what surgery is the point.
I was thinking about how to align with that appearance. There's this dual danger as well as, I don't know why the word hospitality came to me, but this benevolence to it.
Hospitality, hostility, what's the difference? Continue.
Right. So the firestorm is behind them, and at night it lights their way. So it is this devastating thing. that could melt them down. It's also lighting their way in the dark and showing them the path. And then during the day, the tornado could sweep them up and shred them. But it's also like protecting them from the Egyptian army behind them, and perhaps providing a level of shielding from the sun, from the heat of the sun. So you've got this like dangerous thing which is protecting them, which is the angel of the Lord, and it's pushing them into the sea to what, drown them or to get bathed up, so they can like, it's like pushing them into this, into a sort of death, which is also their cleansing. It's all there.
I love that.
Person's there and they hate God. They can look at it as like, here is the elemental monster driving me into the sea to drown me. Took me from my home. Yes, I was a slave and I had food and stuff and it was fine. Whatever, the Egyptians weren't that bad. And now here it is chasing me.
They were literally beating my people and killing us and hurting us, but I guess they weren't that bad.
Yeah, but it's like now I'm out here in the desert and a tornado is chasing me to the sea to drown.
You know, I think for a second here, I can actually put myself in their mind and it's like, I'd be so exhausted. I'm just like, what am I doing? I'm going to die. I'm just going to die out here. It's like, I can get behind that. But I think the difference is you kind of like yield yourself to it. And that's what's really going to make the difference is like, I can feel it. I mean, like, I'm just going to die. I don't know what to do. I can't go back because this tornado is going to rip me apart if I do. But
yeah,
if I go forward, I'm going to drown. It's like, I'm too exhausted to think. I'm just going to let it herd me. I'm going to let it drive me like cattle.
Yeah, I like that yielding. Yeah.
But then the sea splits and you're like, oh, I'm on the other side. I
didn't see that coming.
And maybe the next time you see death in your face, you're like, well, I'm going to die. But in the back of your mind, you can remember that he saved you at the last second. So maybe that'll happen. But I think on some level, he asks us to yield. Because you make a good point. Like multiple times when he split the sea or when he split some rivers, he wanted people to walk into it first. And I really like how you brought up, it's like baptism. It's like passing into death, cleansing, etc. But I think there's also this request of God being like, hey, if I didn't save you, would you still obey me? Like, if you actually died here, would you do that for me? Talk about a monstrous request. But the thing is, it's sort of like, well, what other choice do I have? It's like, why would I like, I think of the story of Job, who everything was taken from him, and his wife's like, curse God and die. And I'm like, I really want to use the B-I-T-C-H word here.
Like, girl, you cray. What you doing? Like, that thing doesn't make any sense.
Like, we're all going to die in the end. Like, someday I kind of want to write a story about an atheist doctor who's exhausting himself, rushing around, trying to save every single person he can because he's so upset at God. At the end, you sort of get the statement of like, so what if you save 10,000 people? Guess what? They're going to die. It's like, did you actually save them? All you did was prolong their time here. Like, who do you think you are? It's like, what choice do you have? You're always going to die. You're always going to die. You're always going to die. There's two guarantees in life, death and taxes.
Unless you're...
it's going to happen.
Sir Enoch Moses.
Sir, like... correct. And the point is, it's just sort of like... you're gonna die. So the question is, are you gonna accept it or not? Like the end result's gonna be the same either way, but you have an opportunity to be like, what comes after the end? We actually have power to influence something here. Like, I think a lot of people get defeatist, like, oh, we're all gonna die in the end. Yeah, but the power you have is actually way more important. Because you don't have the power to save yourself from temporary death. Boo-hoo. Sorry, I don't want to mock people, but like, let's think about this. Death is temporary. We don't have power over this world, but okay, but this life is temporary. What we have power over is eternity.
Amen.
Like, What do you mean we're it's defeatist? No, the power we actually have is way more important. But in order to achieve, in order to employ that power and achieve an eternal life rather than eternal death, eternal suffering, because death is not cessation. It's just agony. It's endless hunger. It's loss. Like, we feel death every day. We call it grieving. When something is torn from us, that's death. When the body dies, the soul is still alive, but it doesn't have a body and to satisfy it anymore. So it's just this wandering spirit. I'm not saying that humans become ghosts, but I kind of don't care, because wandering ghosts is really accurate of what hell is like. And it's also really accurate to our existence in these earthly living bodies, living, quote unquote.
Yeah.
I'm kind of going off on a rant, but it is about monsters.
Yeah.
And my point is, like, are we going to submit? Are we going to die? Are we going to be like, you're right, you're pushing me into the sea, you're tearing me apart, but, like, I accept it.
To call back to our first episode of Is God a Monster? We defined monster as somebody who has the power to cause death, who has power over something else. And we need to trust that every manifestation of Jesus that has holy power, that has the ability to control and honestly has the right to control that death, is going to do it in the most just and holy way. And I think that's a great point that you guys are making in, you know, just bringing it back to this manifestation of fire and of cloud. Is that was the reaction that was required of the Israelite people, was to trust. Because again, thinking about this practically, you see a pillar of cloud during the day, but you also see the dust cloud of the chariots of Pharaoh chasing your entire people. Mm-hmm. And you look at it and go, how is one cloud going to protect me from actual physical people here? Right? And at the same token, it's like, okay, sure, we have a pillar of fire by night so we can see, but that also means we have a beacon of light telling us where we exactly are every single moment in the night when we could be using it to hide. And God is saying, either way, if I'm being that beacon in the desert to let everybody else know where you are in a really difficult time, trust me that I'm going to take care of you. Trust me that I'm going to be able to protect you from the armies that are coming against you. And they had to butt heads against that reality of, okay, I am terrified of Pharaoh. I'm also terrified of this giant tornado and this giant fire. I'm terrified of the reality of, I don't know which one is actually worse, but I'm going to trust God because he's the one that has power and has shown himself to have power over Pharaoh before. And I'm going to trust he's going to do it again, regardless of what that's going to look like. Whether that means, you know, that pillar of fire is going to eat the entirety of Pharaoh, or, you know, when Moses says, okay, we're going to walk in the water and we have to walk through it, we have to trust God. And I think that's what that image of the cloud and the fire is demonstrating. You know, that specific monstrous manifestation is, are you going to trust Jesus when things look really scary?
Yeah, I think it's so good. It's like, I could have gone either way. It's like, is it going to protect us when the Egyptians get really close? Is it going to eat us? Is it going to eat the Egyptians? It's like,
one thing that I looked up the verse again just to reread it and refresh myself on the story, and something really stood out to me, because if I were to ask both of you without looking up the verse, just summarize, like, what happened, like what was going on, how would you describe the events that's going on, specifically with the pillar of fire and cloud.
Wow. Well, the best I can remember it is that we're at the point where, you know, the people of Israel have left Egypt. They got their loot with them. They actually have some Egyptians with them who've left along with them. They've gone out in the desert. The Pharaoh's army has begun to chase them. The pillar is behind them, and they're being led to the Red Sea.
Right.
That's the rough sketch I have.
So in that, you said the pillar, right? The pillar of fire, the pillar of cloud.
The Lord in the pillar. Yeah.
Yes. It says the Lord is in the pillar.
Yeah.
He's there with them, like, yeah, physically, like, yeah, it, obviously he's using the fire and the cloud to protect his full manifestation from coming through, because that would just kill everybody in an instant. But it's not just that he set up a pillar of fire and cloud for them to lead them, and like, okay, cloud and fire, you lead my people, I'm going to be all the way over here. He was in the fire and the cloud with them.
Yeah, that's a little facade. It's Christ.
Yeah, that's amazing.
I'm glad you brought that back up. That was part of the reason why Matthew brought it up in the first place. It's because, like he's saying, that Christ is in this.
Yeah.
This is a manifestation of him. It's not just he sent a pillar. It's like, yeah, he's there. That's him.
And I really wanted to touch on that, because I don't think we touched on that in the recording. It's like, it's a manifestation of Jesus because the Lord is in the pillar. It's not just, this is a cool, you know, showing of power of God. It's like, no, he was physically there.
Yeah. It's, I mean, you could say Jesus appears as a tornado elemental.
Yes. Fire elemental, yeah. Tornado elemental.
It's like, that's, no, it's like, I can't see how that's wrong.
Is it now time for me to bring up my favorite manifestation of monsters that you're bringing up him as an elemental of dark cloud and fire?
Yes.
Okay,
so before you do it, let's wrap up the fire and cloud. Any last thoughts on that? Because I think that it wraps it up really well with us talking about what's required of us. You know, Kellen, you said anytime there's a monstrous manifestation, change is required, or a reaction is required. You know, change in posture is required. So what I'm perceiving from this manifestation is that trust is required. And that could go for a lot of manifestations, but specifically when things are dire, you trust that the Lord has the power to cause death to those things that are causing fear and causing you to run away from God. He has the power to kill the thing that you're running away from. And that's what I feel like is being displayed in the manifestation of the fire cloud, and evidently the splitting of the waters too, because those come crashing back down on our enemy. What about you guys as we wrap up the fire and cloud?
My primary takeaway that's totally new for me was what Matthew said, or was it you, Chaz? One of you mentioned how, like, the fire at night told the Egyptian army exactly where Israel was. And we can also say the same. Buzz Chaz, okay. We also say the same for the cloud. It's like, these are just beacons saying, hey, enemies, look, people you can slaughter. And I was reminded of Psalm 23, I think, where he said, he will prepare a table before you in the presence of your enemies.
Yep.
He will prepare a table for me in the presence of my enemies. It says, surely goodness and mercy will follow me all the days of my life. Did he just name the pillars? It's one goodness and the other mercy. But point being is, like, he's like, we're in the presence of our enemies. Like, our enemies are going to hate it. Hate seeing us being blessed. It's like we have this feast in front of us. And we're like, this tastes good. And our enemy's like, what you doing? Gonna kill you. I'm just like, yeah, don't care. Just gonna keep eating.
Yep.
It's like, you can't touch me. Like, the table is going to kill you. Like, I don't need to get up and defend myself. This table is gonna, like, it's gonna pull a Beauty and the Beast.
Yeah.
It's gonna get up like that armoire and body check you.
This was prepared specifically for me in this place, in your presence. So if it's prepared by the monster that has power over you, I know that I'm going to be safe sitting at the table that was prepared by that monster.
Mm-hmm. Like, my god's way, way more scary than you guys. My god is the thunderstorm.
Mm-hmm.
What do you have? Nothing that powerful.
I think you guys covered it so well. I don't have much to add. I was just, yeah, it's hard. You guys really covered it well. The only thing I might say is that the most terrifying elements of reality are forgot playthings, tools, costumes you can put on, a cape. Like the most terrifying thing is forgot a tool. I could, that's not new information, but like, I don't know, just visualizing God as a giant twisting tornado of fire. Done. It's like a thing that's protecting us. I just love the combination of like the terror and like the total, the peace that could come from knowing that the terror is not for you. It's for your enemy. It was ultimately the devil. It's, yeah, the tornado is there to consume the devil.
That song, All Consuming Fire, has a different meaning now with the fire.
Yeah. You know. I was wondering, like, I was thinking of that. Like, this week, your God is an all-consuming fire. Is that based on a scripture reference?
I think so.
I hope so.
I'm pretty sure somewhere in scripture says your God is an all-consuming fire. Let's look it up.
Yeah, that's all I had.
One thing I'm reminded of, well, two things. One is I've always liked the idea of a tornado that loves me, that, like, I literally just run up and throw myself into it, and it, like, swirls me around like a dad. And then it just gently sets me back down. Like, how awesome would that be? Like, when we're little kids, if we have a strong enough dad, he can pick us up and throw us in the air and then catch us. And it's like, we giggle and laugh and it's great. It's just like, in heaven, I feel like God can just create a tornado and, like, we're like, got a stare. And I just jump into it. And the wind carries me exactly where he wants it to, and I'm fully protected. It's like, that's the safest place to be.
Mm, yeah.
Even in just earthly terms, the safest place to be is in the eye of the storm. Because that's where it's calmest. That's like, everything on this earth, everything that happens is metaphorical in some way. So just the fact that the eye of the storm is the safest place to be, not just like safety from the storm, but the storm itself protects you from anything that's coming against you. Like, just imagine a cool fantasy series where you have a character who's desperately running away, and at the last moment they can't do anything, and their enemy is surrounding in, and all of a sudden this tornado appears in the sky, and this whole time you've been seeing the clouds forming, storm rumbling, and then, like, there's a person there, and your main character is hiding in a shed, and you see the enemy encroaching, and they're slowly trying to figure out where he is, and the character's just, like, scared and praying or whatever, and then you see up in the sky this tornado forming and comes down right on top of the shed where he is in the hiding. It completely decimates the shed and destroys it, and it destroys some of the enemies, and just all of the enemies disperse and run away as the tornado grows and grows and grows. And then afterwards, after it kills a bunch of the enemies and the rest of the enemies are scattered and run far away, it slowly dwindles and it never moves from that one spot, and it slowly dwindles and just And you just see in this complete clearing where everything else has been cleared away, the character. You're just like, I'm alive. Because the eye of the storm is where you can be calm. It's where you can have peace, and it's going to protect you from anything that's trying to break through the barrier of cloud, whirling, tornado, wind.
I think there's a nice piece of art to be done. It takes a little bit of creative license with the Exodus story. Repositions the storm a little bit.
Well, we don't need to base it off that. We can just do whatever we want. But I do want to say there's a book that I would love to, I'd love to be able to sell it, actually. It's called Spirit of the Rainforest, a Yanomamo's Shaman Story. And it's a true story written by, well, it was recorded orally onto recording devices by missionaries. It is people in tribes in the Venezuelan rainforest telling their own story. That recording was then transcribed and like quadruple checked. So like it is the story as told by the people, even though it was recorded, transcribed, and then published by in a different language, because it was also, of course, translated. So I highly recommend reading it. It is graphic because these people hold nothing back. It's a true story, though. And it follows like people, a tribe over about 40 years, a couple of tribes. And they're shamans and they're ex-shamans. And so they talk about how they would engage with spirits and go into the spiritual realm and do stuff, and how shamans would curse. The shamans of different tribes would curse other tribes, would send spirits after the children of another tribe, and would actually kill them, would actually make them sick and kill them. Shamans curse people for a leopard to come after them. And if you went out, a spirit would provoke or even inhabit a leopard and cause a leopard to attack and kill you. Like, it was a known thing, and so they were scared of enemy shamans. Well, at one point, an entire tribe gives their life over to Yahweh. Because here's another thing, and I'm not going to spoil much, but like, the shamans look up into the sky, they see heaven. They're just told that god is called the enemy god, because he hates them. They're just lied to by their spirits, but they can look up and see heaven. So they already knew that Yahweh is real before missionaries ever came to them.
Interesting.
So yeah. Missionaries come to them, say, hey, the God that you know, they didn't say it this way. They're like, hey, there's a God and he loves you, and expounded on the story. And they're like, oh, wait, we know that person. And so a whole tribe and other individuals give themselves over to Yahweh. And there's really cool statements said, like one shaman says that when God came to him, he said he was warm. It was nothing like what his spirit said. He was warm. He loved. And it's just like this feeling of love.
Oh, it's so fascinating. Yeah, it's what I've heard about some ancient Mesopotamian stuff, where a lot of ancient religions have a story about like a most high God who's like overthrown by a lesser god, and like everyone, like all the lesser gods are in rebellion against this guy, and he dies and he's gone, and then the world is ruled by these other guys instead. It's like, yeah, it's like there's this story, and it's fascinating that they felt hated by God, but it's like,
were they at least told that he hates,
yeah, them? They were told that he hates them, but he really hates the evil spirits who are oppressing the people through the shaman, yeah, and using the shamans. So it's like, it's like interesting, because it's like, to the extent that they embody the evil spirits, they could very well perceive themselves as hated. Because it's not their humanity that's hated, it's the spirit that's tormenting them.
Though they also never got to know God, part of it. It's not that they felt hated, it's just they were told that,
yeah,
didn't want anything to do.
And that compounds the problem.
But yeah. But the reason I bring it up is because there's a certain point at which an entire village gives themselves over to Yahweh. And a enemy shaman is upset about that fact and curses them. And so they won't go out of the village to hunt, and their food sources are dwindling. And they're like, what do we do? And the missionary is there, is trying to encourage them and say, like, guys, y'all, like, he doesn't have any power over you. You have Yahweh now. But nobody's, like, willing to believe it because they're so terrified. And as a last-ditch resort, because these people cannot bear being called cowards, the missionary straight up says to them, like, y'all are cowards. And the men are so offended that the town starts grieving, because the men is like, well, we can't let him call us cowards. We have to go. But they're all fully convinced that they're going to be killed by leopards. And then they leave, and they come back within 10 minutes with a deer or a gazelle or whatever it is. And they're like, we're shocked, or maybe it was a boar or something. And they were like, we were barely out of the village, and this creature just walked onto the path in front of us and just waited. It just waited for us to shoot it, and we came back. And I said this because I was reminded of it by the fact that, like, God prepares a table for us in the presence of our enemies. It's like the enemy can't touch us unless God explicitly allows it. Unless Yahweh explicitly allows it.
Yeah, that's very biblical. that story of King Ahab and the prophets of Baal and the deceiving spirits, it's so fascinating. Because you have this example of these tormenting demons who are explicitly authorized by God to torment this wicked king.
Yeah. Is it time? Do I get to share now?
We've actually been going for quite some time now, and this is actually probably going to be part 3 of episode 3. So I'm unfortunately going to have to make you a little bit sad, Kellen, and I'm going to have to end the episode here. But no worries, we will cover your favorite manifestation in the next episode. You can check that out on Spotify coming soon. I do just want to give one more thank you to everybody who's given their time to listen and come and hang out with us in the Discord. I really appreciate each and every one of you. Just every listen counts. And if you would please listen to us on Spotify, leave us a review on Spotify, and interact with us there in the Q&As, some of the question responses down in the bottom of the Spotify, that would be greatly appreciated. We do have a Discord you can come and hang out with us at, and the link for that is bit.ly/TheLambsGuild, capital T, capital L, capital G, The Lambs Guild. And if you would check us out on our website, soaringsheep.com, that would also be really cool. We have some really great pages up there that are live now as you're listening to this, which includes a blog post and some revamped pages. So go ahead and explore around a little bit, see what you find. We hope you guys enjoy that. We also have a discount code for our faithful podcast listeners, which is ATTIC15, and that will give you 15% off your entire purchase. It's not just for t-shirts. You can use it on hats, hoodies, the book, anything that is on our website store, you can use it on. So thank you again for listening to The Dark Attic, and we look forward to having you come back for episode 3, part 4, maybe episode 4, whatever we decide to call it once that's done being recorded and edited. Hope you guys have a great one. Stay safe, and I hope to see you guys back here soon. Bye.